I mentioned that all signs are pointing to a healthy gross domestic product figure for the third quarter that we're in right now. What do we have? A couple of weeks left. A couple of weeks left in the third quarter. But, you know, we have data that comes in on a regular basis. And when you look over the data that's been coming in, it continues to support the idea that this third quarter is going to be a healthy quarter. We could get a nice figure on gross domestic product growth here in this quarter. We've already seen the unemployment rate dropping down to the lowest level in a real long time at 3.9%. In fact, we've reached the point where we have more job openings than qualified workers. We're already there right now. More job openings than qualified workers. That's where we are in the United States right now. So we definitely have a tightening labor market, even a tight labor market at this point. But we had some good data coming in this week as well, which feeds into this idea that we're going to have a good quarter. Industrial production increased 0.4% in the month of August. Now, the consensus for industrial production for August was 0.3%. I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but coming in at 0.4%, that's better than expectations. Furthermore, in the month of July, industrial production enjoyed an upward revision. It originally was reported at 0.1%, but it has now been revised up to 0.4%. That's quite a revision that occurred for the month of July. So that was a positive input. The month of June was revised down. It had been reported at a very high 1%, and that was revised down to 0.6%. So what we do is we smooth out this activity with a three-month moving average. And a three-month average basis, industrial production for the 3 months through August rose 0.5%. Now, that's the best three-month figure since April of this year. And that certainly indicates a healthy amount of activity in the economy. And that's why I say I fully expect we're going to get a healthy gross domestic product number for the third quarter. We'll have to wait because the preliminary estimate on third quarter gross domestic product will not be released until the final week of October. So we'll have to be patient and wait for that figure to come out. I think it will be a healthy figure. We also saw manufacturing output increase 0.2% for the month of August. There was some strength in the vehicle component in manufacturing of vehicles. If you exclude vehicles, then the manufacturing sector was flat for the month of August. And we watch those figures as well. On a year-over-year basis, which gives you a really good handle on what's going on out there over the last year, industrial production was up 4.9%. That's a good rate. In fact, that's the best rate since December of 2010. That 4.9% figure on a year-over-year, the best number year-over-year since December of 2010. So that certainly shows we've seen some pickup in economic activity. Now, we also watch capacity utilization because we're always on the lookout for bottlenecks and shortages. That's not good news for the economy. When you have bottlenecks and shortages, you have a problem, especially with inflation. Well, we watch this capacity utilization rate, and it has picked up a little bit, 78.1%. That's the figure, 78.1% for the month of August. And that has gone up over the last year by 2.4%, if you can believe that. If you go back a year and look at capacity utilization, it was at 75.7% a year ago, and now it's at 78.1%. And obviously, we have to watch this because we all know that you squeeze the system when you get a pickup in production, and it shows up in capacity utilization. But the good news is we're still not at the average going all the way back to the early 1970s. Going all the way back to there, we're still below the average that prevailed during that period. And what that means is we still have some excess production capacity in the system. And that's good news because, as I say, you really want to stay away from a system that gets caught up in bottlenecks and shortages. That just about every time that will lead you to economic problems. So we have all of these factors coming in the flow, that the data flow, that is convincing, I think, that we're going to have a healthy figure when they get around in late October to reporting the preliminary number on third quarter gross domestic product growth. Now, we also received information on retail sales for the month of August, and they certainly came in soft. Retail sales gained 0.1% for the month of August. The consensus had looked for 0.4%, but it didn't happen. But the previous month of June was revised up. That had come in at 0.5%. They revised that one up to 0.7%. And you see, when you come across these month-to-month variations and this month-to-month volatility, you really have to go back to that three-month moving average basis, which is what I prefer. And on a three-month moving average basis, you had a 0.3% decline in retail sales. And, increase in retail sales, 0.3%. Now, on the one hand, a 0.3% increase in retail sales for the 3 months is the lowest figure since March. Okay, that indicates there's been some moderation in consumer spending. But on the other hand, it's still at a reasonably healthy level when you take a look at all of the figures. So I think all of that goes into the mix when you're looking at this kind of thing. For example, on a year-over-year basis, retail sales are up over 6%. Hey, that's a good number. Year-over-year up over 6%. In fact, that's the best number since December of 2011. That's going back 7 years. So these figures that come out, they vary and they fluctuate and they have month-to-month factors going into them. But I think when it all settles out, you have to say, hey, these are decent numbers. These are pretty darn good numbers. We have also seen a rebound in consumer sentiment. The University of Michigan Wolverine Consumer Sentiment Index rebounded 4.6 points in the preliminary September survey that came out. It's now up to 100.8. And listen to this. That's the second best reading since January of 2004. Hey, that's over 14 and a half years ago. Second highest reading since then in the University of Michigan Wolverine Consumer Sentiment Index. And that's certainly showing that consumers have a positive view of what is going on out there. And that's important. That's important. So we watch all of these figures as they come in. They're all important. And we'll certainly continue to do that. Well, you know, I guess it shouldn't come as too much of a surprise, but we see additional data coming in this week about the budget deficit continuing to increase. As a matter of fact, the month of August, just that 1 month, the budget deficit was $214.1 billion budget deficit. That's just for the month of August. And Congressional Budget Office had predicted $211 billion. We came in a little above that. Only 1 month left now in the fiscal year. Keep in mind that at the federal level, we have a fiscal year ending September 30th. Well, we have the August data in now. We have the deficit number, which, of course, gets added to the national debt. And we have those figures in now. We just have one more month, this month of September, and we'll know those figures in another few weeks. And that'll give us a 12-month total for the actual fiscal year. Now, if we take a moving 12-month total, right now we're at, it's amazing how this is going up. Remember, these are good times, right? The economy's growing, and here we are. $890 billion is the deficit over the last 12 months. That's the 12 months through August, and that's 4.5% of gross domestic product. You remember, we talked about not wanting to go over 3%. And by the way, this would be especially during good times, all right? We don't want to go over 3% of gross domestic product with the deficit spending, because it becomes harder and harder to do so, and it presents more of a long-term strain on economic growth. Well, 4.5% of gross domestic product, that is what is represented by the last 12 months. And that's the biggest figure, that percentage is the biggest figure since May of 2013. And, of course, in May of 2013, we were just a few years removed from the financial crisis. Now we're a decade removed from the financial crisis. So that's what's going on out there, and it's all because of spending. Spending is doing it. When we look at the receipts side, they're almost flat. If you take, it's amazing, despite the economic growth, I mentioned real GDP up 2.8% in the last year. That's a good figure. Despite that, the 12-month total federal receipts, almost unchanged. It's increased 0.3% over the 12 months through August. That's less than 1/3 of 1%. But look at the spending. I mean, I don't know how the Freedom Caucus in Congress can deal with these numbers, because they used to stand for fiscal responsibility until they abdicated that about a year and a half ago. 6.6% spending growth, and that's the most since November of 2015. 6.6% spending growth, almost no change in federal receipts for the 12 months through August. I mean, that is amazing, but that's how we have run this deficit up, and that all gets piled onto the national debt, which is in the low 20 trillions and growing with these deficits. I guess one of the most remarkable things that I've ever seen in Washington is the abdication of fiscal responsibility by those that formerly represented fiscal responsibility. There are those in Washington, certainly the Freedom Caucus in Congress, that stood up strongly, stoutly for fiscal responsibility year after year. And then about a year and a half ago, they abdicated. And you don't hear much about it, do you? Even in a midterm election year, you just don't hear much about it. And here we are. Now, why is this happening? Well, of course, corporate tax receipts have fallen out of bed. On a year-over-year basis, corporate tax receipts are down 22%. That's the biggest drop since May of 2010. Of course, back then, corporate tax receipts were down because corporate profits had gone down so much in the recession back in 08-09. Well, now we have corporate tax receipts down 22% year-over-year. The reason is obvious. The tax changes reflected much lower rates. The corporate rate was taken from 35 to 21, and there you go. And remember, we've had steady growth in non-farm payrolls, but even then, we've only had a 0.6% year-over-year gain in employment tax receipts. That's the lowest since 2012, because once again, we have not had much wage growth. I was looking at the new numbers that came in this week. There are two numbers that you use to look at real wage growth, which is the only thing that matters, is inflation-adjusted wage growth. known as real wage growth. Well, here are the numbers. Over the last 12 months, wages have risen 2.9%. And inflation, consumer price index inflation, has risen 2.7%. So the difference between the increase in wages and the increase in inflation is known as real wage growth, where you can actually get more for the money that you've earned. And that is 0.2%. 0.2%. To put that in simple terms, that would mean that a year ago, a $100 figure would now, adjusted for inflation, be, and adjusted for wage growth, be $100.20. And that 20-cent real increase on a $100 example would represent the real wage growth. That's why you hear so much pushback, you hear so many complaints about people that they're not getting ahead. How many times do you hear from people that say they're not getting ahead in terms of their economics? Well, the reason they say that is because of that number. I mean, if your real wage growth has gone from $100, for example, to $100.20, which is 0.2% on a year-over-year basis, well, it's not surprising then that we've heard from people say, you know, hey, I don't really feel like I'm getting ahead very much. Well, you're not. You're not. You're getting ahead 0.2% in real terms, and it's understandable why people feel that way.